Good morning, members of the commission and Secretary Hepler. Good afternoon, I should say. Keith Fisk with the Wildlife Division. I'm the administrator of the statewide wildlife damage program. Just to remind commissioners and for the so Mr. Spring can get brought up to speed here. In 2019, our agency operated the Nest Predator Bounty Program and a live trap giveaway program. And at the conclusion of that program here in August, we spoke with the commissioners and we worked with a firm out of Virginia called Responsive Management to conduct a comprehensive survey of not only the participants of the program, but also a random sample of South Dakotans. And I'm happy to report that we shared that comprehensive report with commissioners here about a week and a half ago via email, with the exception of Commissioner Spring. We can certainly get you that information. And I'm happy to say that today we have the gentleman that's responsible for that research here to present that information. So we're gonna have him present his information and then, of course, take any questions from the commission. And then after that, Kevin Roebling and I will have a brief presentation on the overview of the program and, of course, get into questions at that time as well. So with that, I'm gonna introduce Mark Damian Duda. He's the Executive Director of Responsive Management. It's a survey firm, or survey research firm, specializing in natural resource and outdoor recreational issues. Over the past 30 years, Mark has conducted over 1,000 studies on how people relate to conservation. He's also an author of more than 150 publications, 4 books on wildlife and outdoor recreation, and Mark is also a wildlife biologist and holds a master's degree with a focus on natural resource policy and planning from Yale University. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Duda, and he has a comprehensive presentation, and then, of course, we'll open it up for questions. So, Mark?
Behind you here. Is it okay if I stand here, and I'm going to sort of walk over here, and I guess I need to talk into here. So, first off, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Maybe next time we can sort of do June, July, September, October. I'm from Virginia, and it's about 60 degrees right now where I am, and there's no wind, but I really do appreciate being here. Look forward to talking to you about this project. And so, yeah, we're going to talk about residents, South Dakota residents, as well as the perceptions of the actual participants themselves in the Nest Predator Bounty Program. And the way that I thought we would do this is I will present the results. I'm going to talk a little bit about the methodology, why we did what we did, and then it sounds like we'll have some time for discussion. I like to start out because I do research, so I like to ask questions. So does anybody know who this is? Sort of the guy and the reason that you're here. The reason that the commissioners are here. This is Aldo Leopold, and a lot of times you see Leopold, who's considered the father of wildlife management, behind a desk, and he's hunched over, and he's old, he's got glasses on. But he started his career out in the woods as well. Aldo Leopold is considered, as I said, the father of wildlife management, wrote the first book on wildlife management called Game Management. And I'm sure some of you in here have read his book, Sand County Almanac. Is that true? Okay, so probably about 95% of the people in here. Started the Wildlife Society. A lot of the principles that we work on are still based on a lot of the things that he talked about in the 1930s and the 1940s. Not only the game management aspects, but also the ethical aspects as well. And in a lot of ways, you could call him a biologist's biologist. So a lot of the stuff that we do, including the reason that the commissioners are here, is he set up these commissions, these public commissions who would give advice to the agencies in terms of wildlife management. And so with all of that said, Leopold was a biologist. But he wrote something pretty interesting in the 1940s that really still holds true today. He said that the problem of wildlife management is not how we should handle the deer. The real problem is one of human management. Wildlife management is comparatively easy. Human management is difficult. I mean, think about what he'd think, 50 years later. And so if you think about how we sort of manage wildlife, we really deal with 3 different aspects of fish and wildlife management. We deal, we being here, fish and wildlife professionals, commissioners, the direct secretary, agency people, sort of in the middle, deal with 3 different aspects of fish and wildlife management. We deal with fish and wildlife populations. We deal with fish and wildlife habitats. And we deal with people. And over my 35-year career, sort of as a biologist, starting as a biologist, and then going into this sort of people side of conservation, the human dimensions, one of the things that always is interesting to me is how, when it came to fish and wildlife populations, and it came to habitats, we were very scientific. We would study things before we managed them. We would study deer. We would study pronghorn. We would study waterfowl. We would study habitats. We would publish information. And then we would develop our management plans from that, correct? I mean, that's kind of how we did things. As a teenager might say, well, you know, of course, duh. But the interesting thing is when it comes to people, that third sort of critical aspect of wildlife management, for years, people assumed things. We were so scientific when it came to those populations of animals and habitats. But, well, I think people think this, and I read an op-ed piece, or I was in the supermarket and somebody said this to me. And we were never as scientific as we probably should have been when it comes to understanding that sort of the most critical aspect now of fish and wildlife management. And so what I'm going to do today is talk about this part here and quite frankly, this part only. When we talk about the Nest Predator Program, there are populations issues, there are habitat issues. But I'm going to talk about the people side of this program. Responsive management actually was started by the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, which you all are a member, in 1985. So the agency sort of initiated this whole thing called responsive management. I was a board member for 5 years, and then in 1990, we were doing a lot of work for the agencies, and they said, you know, we really didn't mean to set up a program that would do survey research or human dimensions for agencies, so why don't you kind of go out on your own? It was scary because I was a biologist at the time with the Florida Game and Fish Commission. So I did that. That was 1990. And this year, we're actually celebrating 30 years of doing human dimensions work for state fish and wildlife agencies. Over that time, we've conducted about 1,000 projects for every state fish and wildlife agency, every federal agency, all the major NGOs like RBFF, the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation, National Shooting Sports Foundation, NRA, American Sport Fishing Association, and sort of on and on. We also do a lot of work for the agency leaders of products that you probably use, Winchester Ammunition, Federal Premium, Yamaha Boats, et cetera. And then we also do work for what sometimes looks like the nation's top 25 in football or basketball, although Clemson now, I guess, is number two or three. We just finished a major project with Clemson. We do a lot of work with Colorado State University. How many of y'all are familiar with the Wildlife Values Study? It was a state-specific study done in South Dakota. Have the commissioners seen that yet? Have they? Okay, we're a co-investigator on that study. We've done work for Duke, Penn State, Rutgers, Stanford, University of Southern California, and others. So I think that's important because a lot of you don't know who I am. Kelly does. I've been working with Kelly for, gosh, probably two or three decades at this point. seems that way, huh? And so that's a little bit about our background and who we are and what we do. We've gone from me, single consultant, to now a staff of almost 100 people. We're based out of Virginia, but we do work worldwide. I just recently returned from Namibia and Botswana doing work. So primarily we do work in the U.S., but we do work around the world. So let me talk about why I'm here, but I think it was, again, important to sort of give a little bit of introduction about what human dimensions is, the perspective of human dimensions, as well as background on who we are. I'm going to talk a little bit about the methodology of what we did and how we did it, and I'm going to take it in sort of two parts. I'm going to talk about the survey results from the participants and then the survey results of the general population. We're going to talk about what they think of you, what they think of the department, how much they know about the Nest Predator Program, what they think of it, and if they think it's important in terms of recruiting people to trapping. In terms of the general population, we're going to talk about their perceptions, again, of you. What do they think of you? Do they like you? Do they not? The approval or disapproval of trapping among residents, their awareness of the Nest Predator Bounty Program, and then what they think about the program. Do they support it? did they depose it, and why? So let's talk about the methodology as it relates to program participants. There's a little over 3,000 participants. A lot of those people are under 18, so we removed those people. This was essentially a census. So we attempted to try to get everybody that was involved with the program to answer. Some of those people had bad addresses. We only had a few people who actually just refused to do it. But we did that in what we call a multimodal way. That is, as if we had a phone number for them, we called them. If they had an email, we emailed them. If they had an address, we sent them a mail postcard. And then if we didn't get them that way, if we had an alternative way, we would try that way as well. Are there any participants in here in terms of that program that got contacted? No participants in the program. Interesting. That's what a census is. And so the participant database was obtained from you all, Game Fish and Parks. And as I said, we removed the younger kids and that type of thing. So everybody who was there who had any kind of contact information, we were able to get in touch with them. We completed about 1,300 surveys, and we did that in October and November of this past year. So the information is sort of hot off the press. This is what one of the postcards looked like. We can also give you the survey instrument itself, which I think some of the commissioners had asked for and such. This is the survey effort. Again, we sort of did everything we could, including contacting people, you know, 4 and 5 times. So we had an address for them, we had a phone number for them, we had an email. If they were able to be gotten, we were able to get them. And most people that had decent information that we could contact them, we did. So then let's turn from the participants to the general population. And in this day and age, how do you get people? You know, you hear about surveys. This guy's going to win. This guy's going to win. This woman's going to win, and whatever. The best way to do that are through what we call a scientific probability-based survey. And what that is involved with having every single person who's over 18 in the state have an equal chance of being contacted. So this isn't a web-based survey where only a few people knew about it or anything. This was a scientific survey. It's called DFRDD, dual frame random digit dialing, where we have, we know, the best way to think about it is if it's nighttime and it's crystal clear and every single person who has a household in South Dakota turns their light on and you're up in a satellite and you look down, you know there's more people in Rapid City or more people here or there than there are in other places. And through probability-based random sampling, through phone numbers, both cell phones and landlines, we know what the area code is, and then we know what the prefix of each individual is in terms of where they live. And then the last four numbers, both with landlines and cells, are randomly generated. You're going to get things like fax machines, you're going to get businesses and other things. And of course, you don't talk to those people. You have to talk to people who actually have a household and are over 18. And so that's sort of a good way to talk about this in terms of the sort of 10,000-foot level. We talk to people with cell phones. Actually, in this day and age, more people have cell phones than landlines. Your split in South Dakota is about 60-40. 60% have primarily cell, 40% have landline. And that's what we got. We closely matched that. And then we interviewed people for several weeks. We talked to people at different times of the day, different days of the week. You know, we don't just call at night. We call during the day. And so you do everything you can to get these individuals. It was a relatively small survey because the budget wasn't huge because we were doing really two surveys. But the sample size was about 418. Sampling error, about 5%. At what we call a 95% confidence interval. And essentially what that means is if I tell you that 50% think something, it really could swing all the way from 45% to 55%. So that's what sampling error is at 95 out of 100 times. Also, then the question is, well, did you talk to more men, did you talk to more women, or anything like that? And when you do that, when you sort of follow this gold standard methodology, your sample looks pretty good. In this case, we weighted slightly by age and gender. It wasn't much. It was a couple of percentage points. And so at this point, you know, we're pretty comfortable that this is representative of what's out there. What else do I need to say about that? Oh, one of the things that I do when you weight data, or if you're familiar with weighting data, what that is sometimes people might get 55% female, and then what you do is you put that down to match what the state is at 51 or 52 or something like that. But after that, you always worry, well, are you changing that raw data? And so what we do is we look at what the raw data said versus that weighted data. And in this case, it was pretty darn close, within a percentage or two. It wasn't like when you start applying these weights that they're all over the place. Does it work? Well, you know, surveys, people always, you know, politicians will always tell you, oh, I don't believe in surveys when they're hiring you to do a survey. It's kind of an irony of the 2020s or something. But it does. It does. We can get really close to looking at South Dakota residents by only talking to a few hundred people. You don't have to talk to thousands of people. That's what probability-based means. You don't have to talk to thousands of people. In fact, you could have maybe an internet survey that's biased. You talk to 10,000 people, but if it's not the right people, if it isn't chosen in the right ways, you know, they could be really off. So it's not a numbers game per se. So let me give you a little bit of perspective. We do 99% of our work is fish and wildlife, natural resource related. As Keith said, we've done about 1,000 studies. But one of the things that we do too, to always check to see if we're any good or not, is we do some political polling as well. We have a contract with the University of Virginia system, and we do projections of election results. The last election, just the most recent one within the past couple of months in Virginia, through a survey that we did with Virginia Commonwealth University, we were able to predict that election within 2 percentage points. Within 2 percentage points. Past elections, you might think about in 2008, 2012, not me, but survey researchers themselves were able to predict those elections down to literally the last electoral vote in every single state. In 2008, it was 49 states, and in 2012, it was 50 states. Survey researchers were able to predict the 2008-2012 election down to almost the last electoral vote using that gold standard. Then came 2016, and things just went off the charts. There's a lot of reasons for that, and I hear that a lot. Well, you know, what happened in this last election? Well, what happened in the last election was a lot of different things. First off, the national elections were predicted almost within exactly the same. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by about 2 to 3 percentage points. And all the national surveys using this methodology showed that. There's lots of other things, though. There's something we call anti-acquiescence bias, where people were afraid to tell people that who they were voting for because it was so politically charged and such, as well as other things, you know, that happened sort of a week before the election showed that survey researchers really missed the mark in some small ways. Again, nationally, those surveys were good, but it came down to about 3 or 4 states where the surveys weren't using the gold standard that we used for this. So anyways, the other thing that I want to say is I've done this for a long time. You know, I've presented to almost every single commission, Fish and Wildlife Commission in the US. And so usually when I'm here, it's a controversial issue. And so, you know, oh, well, you just did this or you did that. And I want to tell you, I care very deeply about our science and our research, but I have no outcome. The reason people hire us is because we're independent researchers. We don't care what people think about this. I'm going to bring you what's out there. But it's not. I don't want you to think that we have some kind of stake in these programs. I have a stake as a professional wildlife conservationist. But so I bring results sometimes where people don't really like them. And so I'm going to give you a couple of examples that are not South Dakota oriented, just because I don't want you to think we just find out things for whatever reason. We do research. That's what we do. That's what we've been doing for 30 solid years. So in one state, and this is not South Dakota, they asked us to look at the attitudes of agency personnel on issues related to management. And one time, a few years ago, I had to stand up with the regional director in a certain area and say, well, you know, 21% of your employees think that you set a good example for the state staff to follow? Ouch. 2 feet away, you know, you're kind of sitting there going, oh my gosh. So, you know, sometimes we bring news that surprises people. One that probably didn't, again, this is not South Dakota, but this was an agency, a state fish and wildlife agency. It was a morale study. And we asked employees, again, separate study from the other one, whether or not agency morale has increased, stayed about the same, or decreased in the past 5 years. Man, look at that number there. I had to stand up in front of that director and tell him that 78% of his staff thought that morale had decreased. So I don't know. Sometimes we do. So Kelly, don't hire us to do like an employee survey. So usually that's an indication that people want to know some things. So, but anyway, so let's get back to the results in terms of the survey results of program participants. What do people think who've been involved in the program about you, the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks? Man, we talked politics a few seconds ago. These are numbers that any politician would kill for. We asked, in general, do you approve or disapprove of the management efforts of South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks? 87% of participants approved. This was before we even talked about the bounty program, and only 6% disapproved. These people probably have your names and numbers on speed dial, commissioners, but you know, in perspective, you've got about 2%. You know, incredible numbers. Those are just absolutely incredible numbers, and my hats are off to the commission and to the department. You're going to see that in the general population that mirrored that fairly closely as well. So this is a little bit out of order. We didn't ask this question in this order. This was a question that was asked after we asked a lot of other questions about the Nest Predator Bounty Program. Because one of the concerns that the department had is this harming the reputation of the department? And so we said, thinking about your opinion of the department prior to your participation in the Nest Predator Bounty Program, how has your opinion of the department's efforts changed, if at all, since participating in the program? Would you say that the program has increased or decreased your overall approval? 60% approve, increased approval, 4% decreased approval, and about almost a third said, well, it just didn't have any effect one way or the other. How about their knowledge of the program? Well, you're thinking, of course, why would you want to know people's knowledge of the program? Well, because they're participating. But remember, a lot of these people are being taken by other people and such, and so we just wanted to simply know, how much would you say you know about the Nest Predator Bounty Program? You can see the results, 35% saying a great deal, and a moderate amount, 51%. But about 15% or so said, well, little to nothing. And those were probably people that other people had brought along, or they just didn't know much about it for whatever reason. Again, these are participants that we're talking about. So let's talk about their attitudes toward the program. Said, thinking about what you've heard about the Nest Predator Bounty Program, what have you heard in terms of from other people? Have you heard mostly positive things, mostly negative, or have you heard both positive and negative? Sort of surprisingly, 60% mostly positive, 30% both positive and negative, and then about 6% mostly negative. So sort of around the board on that. Well, again, these are participants of the bounty program. Do you personally approve or disapprove of the Nest Predator Bounty Program in South Dakota? As you would expect, about 91% either strongly or moderately approve. Maybe surprisingly too, 5% disapproved. So for whatever reason. And we did look into that as well. We'll show you that later on. So we have people who are participants who supported the program and participants who didn't. In terms of the main reasons that people approved of the program, to control predator populations and to protect birds and nests and a variety of other reasons. Among participants who disapproved, these are those 5% who disapproved, program is not effective and waste of money and resources, 41%. And then these are multiple responses, so somebody could say, you know, this, this, and this. Nope, this was a great question. Thank you. This was an entirely open-ended question, and people could say whatever they wanted. And we spent about a week sort of going through, listening to those answers, putting those answers in their proper places and developing that. So good question. So yeah. Do you agree that agree or disagree that the Nest Predator Bounty Program is an acceptable use of the budgeted $500,000? Maybe as not much of a surprise, 83% either strongly agreed or moderately agreed. Almost 10% of participants did not agree that it was a good use of money. How satisfied were they with the program? 90% were satisfied, and again, that about that same 5% were somewhat or very dissatisfied. How about the program's effectiveness at recruiting new trappers? That was one of the reasons given on why this program was there. What do people think? Well, the first thing to know is what these people were doing beforehand. Were they trapping or not? And upwards of about 8 of 10 of the people who were in the program had trapped before. So you could argue that the sort of new recruits is less than 1 in 5. Well, we have the same people at 80%, but do you think your participation increased, stayed the same, or decreased compared to the previous 3 years? And that's where you see an increase. About 71% of those people said that their participation increased, 3% decreased, and about 25% stayed the same. So sort of, you know, looking at what this is telling us is that while it's not recruiting a ton of new people, it does seem to be increasing the people who are trapped or have already been trappers. Is it an important reason you participated in trapping in 2019? About 8 of 10 participants either agreed or disagreed. 10%, I'm just rounding up, 9% didn't. If you look at the report and you see, you know, these two numbers and it doesn't add up to this number, it's due to rounding. I can count. But if this number was 1.4 and this was 1.4, it would show as 1 here and 3 is here. So it's simply just a rounding issue if you go into the report. We tried to put that in any place that that happened. So then we have three sort of final questions in this section of participants. These are completely separate questions. But there's a lot here, so I wanted to just put them on one graph. We asked participants if they agreed or disagreed these three statements. The program has increased trapping participation in South Dakota in general. You can see the 52% is strongly agree. The light green is moderately agree, total of about 82%. The program has increased interest in outdoor recreation among youth in South Dakota, total of about 69% agreed. And then participating in the program has increased your participation in outdoor activities in general, about 64%. So I think we're here. Okay, now, so those are the participants. Now let's turn to South Dakota residents 18 years old and older. Mm-hmm, yeah.
So to be a participant, was it somebody that got a live trap or was it somebody that turned in a tail? For, how did you know who the participants were?
Great question. We obtained that from Game Fish and Parks. And Keith, you can help me on this, because we used the list that you gave us. And I think it was simply people who had been paid. So they had to give their address. Yeah. Good question.
So did you ask, or did Game Fish and Parks someplace else ask, whether these participants were children or whether they were adults?
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said at the beginning. I said we had a database of the 3,000 people who participated, and we had their ages, and we took those 17 and younger out. So,
all the 17 and younger?
No.
All right. Did you find out whether the 17 and younger were assisted and were by an adult? For example, under codified law 41A31, you can't kill them except by a gun, an arrow, or an air gun. And then the little ones need a mentor or a company. So were you separating out whether the person doing this was a child alone or a child with an adult?
No, that's what I just said. If you were 17 and younger and you participated in the program, we did not call you because there's all sorts of issues with research with youth. So we did not include those people. It wasn't any reason related to the program. It was related to legal issues as it relates to survey research and those under 18 of age.
So let me just interrupt a minute then.
Sure.
It probably will work better if we wait till your presentation is done before we start asking questions, and we'll have plenty of time and we'll get everybody's questions in, but it seems like it might be more efficient to let you finish and then we'll take questions.
Thank you. So now we're on to the general population. These are South Dakota residents, 18 years old and older. So the first question, as we talked about, is what do they think of you? What do they think of the department? And so these people did not know we were calling about the Nest Predator Bounty Program or anything like that. We asked, we gave some information. The South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks is the agency responsible for managing the state's parks, fisheries, and wildlife, and providing outdoor recreation opportunities. In general, do you approve or disapprove of the management efforts of South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks? Similar to participants, numbers that I would say a politician would kill for. 82% approval. I mean, those are incredible numbers. Those are very high numbers. As we talked about, I've done work for every single state fish and wildlife agency. These are among the best. I mean, these are great numbers. So y'all, I'm from Virginia, so I can say that, are doing obviously a great job. We did the Colorado State University Wildlife Values Study as well, and that showed very similar positive attitudes toward you all compared to either the state government as a whole in South Dakota or the federal government. So great numbers. And again, I love to make the point that these are the people you probably hear from a lot more than some of these people. Generally, people don't come in and say, you know what, you're doing a great job. But it's really easy for people to say, you know what, blah, blah, blah. So then this is a question that was asked toward the end of the survey, but it made sense to have it here because in working with department staff on this survey and the things that they were interested in knowing about, they wanted to know, is this program harming our reputation? And so this was done toward the end of the study, and it was people who were aware of the program. So you're going to see that a lot of people were not even aware of this program. But we said, you initially said that, either you approve, disapprove, whatever, of the management efforts of the South Dakota Department Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks. Thinking about your opinion of the department prior to your awareness of the Nest Predator Bounty Program, how has your opinion of the department efforts changed, if at all, since becoming aware of the program? And then we go through the thing. I mean, a good survey is always going to say, do you approve or disapprove? Do you support, do you oppose? Do you agree or do you disagree? Well, you can see that. You'll see this number. 62% just weren't aware. They weren't aware of the program. 10% said it increased approval. 4% decreased approval, and 24% said it had no effect at all. So, GFP was concerned about the program. It doesn't appear to really be harming the reputation, except with about 4% of the population out there. So, before, again, they didn't know we were asking about the specific program. We wanted to ask some general questions that were related to this. And that first one was, well, do they approve or disapprove of trapping in general? This is different. We do a lot of work on the national level in other states in terms of trapping. And 78%, about 8 out of 10 South Dakota residents said that they approve of trapping. About 10% disapprove of trapping. And 8% sort of fell in the middle, and 5% didn't know. Again, that's about 15-20% higher than the national average. But that didn't surprise us because it's South Dakota. And when you start asking Californians and Floridians and New Yorkers, that number certainly comes down when you do national numbers. 78, about 8 out of every 10. And this is where that adding came into effect. So one of the things that we did in this study is, and we didn't have a lot to work with because 400 people isn't a lot to do cross-tabulations. But the question is not only what South Dakota residents think about trapping, but different groups of individuals. And so in the report, we have lots of these called, these are cross-tabulations. You can see that 78% is what South Dakota residents as a whole think. But you can see people who live in rural areas, males, are more likely to support trapping than, say, people who don't like you, that disapproves of management efforts of game, fish, and parks. People who live in large cities tend to be more female. So there's some information like that. Be a little bit wary of this, because when you start cutting that 420 down or whatever it was, those sampling errors become pretty big. But I think it's important information to have. In terms of those who are more likely to disagree and disapprove of trapping, we also ran those numbers, those who disapprove of management efforts in general view. This is going to become important in the end when I talk a little bit about what seems to be driving this. And for most of the questions, we ran those crosstabs. So the next question is, are people even aware of the program in general? Well, not a lot of them are. 61% of your residents said, I'm not aware of it. About 40%, 38% said they were indeed aware of the program. So you know, certainly not on top of the radar. And then of those people, you saw that, that's a roundup. The 62% who weren't aware, of the people who were aware, did they know a lot, a moderate, or a little? And again, of those people, only about 7% said a great deal, 16% a moderate, 14%. So not flying high as we might think on the radar. Sometimes we live in our world and we hear things and we think everybody knows about these things, but that's not really the case here. So what do they think about the perceptions and their attitudes toward the Nest Predator Bounty Program? So then we asked, of those people who were aware of the program, so our sample size decreases here. Remember, 62% of South Dakota residents had not heard of the program, and so we're not going to ask people who tell us they don't know about the program and haven't heard about it if they've heard mostly positive or negative things. So we only asked those people who said they knew about the program. And then again, this is the perception issue. Well, did they hear mostly positive things about the program, mostly negative, or both positive and negative equally? And you can see how that's distributed. So then we asked them, and I'm going to read this here because we wanted to know what they thought of the program itself. And it was really important to get this information down, and each person who answered the survey had this read to them. South Dakota Nest Predator Bounty Program provides trapping opportunities for state residents while reducing predators that prey on the nests of pheasants and ducks during the nesting season. Program participants receive $10 per eligible predator that is harvested through trapping. Eligible species to trap for this program are raccoon, striped skunk, badger, possum, and red fox. And so then we said, well, hearing this, in general, do you approve or disapprove of the Nest Predator Bounty Program? Numbers surprised us. We didn't think that it would be a lot, as much support as there was, 83% supporting that, and 11% opposing it. So sort of overwhelming approval here. So one of the things that I like to do is I like to put numbers on this, because a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't know. Everybody I know approves. Everybody disapproves. And so I put some numbers on this for you. In terms of those 18 years old and older, you've got about 534,000 residents who are supporting that program. You've got almost 71,000, who oppose or disapprove of that program. It's a lot of people. And you probably hear from a lot of those people, from what I understand. 70,000 people. So I did a little bit of homework. I am a college football fan. So I imagine a lot of you guys went to South Dakota State or have been to a football game at South Dakota State University. Is that true? Okay. So I heard yeses. Okay, I'm seeing a no here. I do this all the time. When I go to Michigan or Ohio, when I present at Ohio State University, I make sure that those numbers are in red and the other ones are in blue, and I'm quite aware of that. But this is not getting into that. This is in terms of just perception. So raise your hand if you've been to that stadium at South Dakota State University. Okay, so most of you have. You've got a perception of how big that is. It's about 20,000. It holds about 20,000 people. So let's put this in perspective in terms of all these people that sounds like you're hearing from that just don't like this program. You fill up South Dakota State University Stadium once, and they're all yelling and screaming, you just beat North Dakota State University. Is that true? No, not true. I know. And you know why I know that? Because I live in Harrisonburg, Virginia, the home of James Madison University. So South Dakota State's been doing to us what they've probably been doing to you, too. So anyway, but this is not about that. This is not about college. I know that almost is like as much of a issue as this program is. You fill up South Dakota State University Stadium once, and they're all yelling and screaming, and they all go home. You fill it up again, second time, they're all out there, they're yelling and screaming, yelling. They go home. You yell it, open that stadium up again, and they all come in, and they're all yelling and screaming. And then they all go home. And then you fill up half that stadium, and they're all yelling and screaming, and then they go home. That's about how many people oppose this program. And so when you see, you know, wow, yeah, overwhelmingly, yes, there's a lot of support, but there's a bunch of people who don't approve either. And so when people see these numbers surprise me. It sounds like they surprise some other folks. This is what it is. You know, we can talk about, well, you should have said this, or you should have said that. We did our best based on what we know about the program, based on the input and the approval of Game, Fish, and Parks. But, you know, again, that's about what that is. Give plus or minus 3, 4, 5 percentage points. 83% approving, 11% disapproving. Now, there's some reasons for this, and we can talk about. But we asked the people who approved of the program why they approved it, and the people who disapproved the program why they disapproved it. People who approved it, supporting and controlling predator populations, and the approval and support of protecting pheasants, ducks, and birds were the primary drivers of that. Again, these were open-ended, and then we took probably a couple of weeks sorting those out and categorizing them. In terms of the main reasons people disapprove, they were concerned about animal welfare, and they disapproved of trapping specifically. Now, I will say that in looking at the data, and I probably should have had this, but I had about a 20-hour trip coming up here, is that one of the things that was really driving the disapproval of the program really were two major variables. People who disapproved of trapping in general, that those people were adamantly opposed to trapping, but also the dislike for the agency. Now, I don't know which comes first. That's sort of a chicken or the egg thing. But those were the two major variables that really seemed to drive the answers in terms of the approval, disapproval for the Nest Predator Bounty Program. So then we asked, well, would you approve or disapprove of the Nest Predator Bounty Program if you knew certain things? Each of these is a separate question. I just put them on there to sort of put them in perspective for you. That a primary goal of the Nest Predator Bounty Program is to enhance pheasant and duck nest success, meaning more pheasant chicks and ducklings survive. 88% either approved or strongly or moderately approved. The red are disapproved. The next question, that a primary goal of the Nest Predator Bounty Program is to increase interest and participation in outdoor recreation and conservation among youth. About 88% said they approved of that. That activity of trapping nest predators during the nesting season has been a utilized management technique for decades in the U.S. that supports wildlife and habitat conservation efforts, 85%. And then finally, that a primary goal of the Nest Predator Bounty Program is to increase trapping participation in general and preserve the trapping heritage, which dropped slightly. So that's a really quick overview. Maybe it's probably not, doesn't feel as quick to you, but there's a lot more information in the report. Be glad to answer questions. I know people, whenever I do surveys and it's controversial about a program, people, why'd you do this, why'd you do that? And be glad to answer anything like that. And I can maybe take a seat up there. But anyways, thank you for listening to that.
So we can take questions. We'll see how it goes, I guess. But before we do that, we want to recognize and welcome Representatives Dennard, Hischke. Thank you for joining us. Welcome. You can ask questions, too. So any questions? I'm sure there's some up here, but before we bring up here, we'll ask. Nancy? Nancy, could you wait a minute? We'll get the mic.
Can you go back to the slide that had the 83 or 84% people agreeing with the predator program being a good program? And I had a question. You probably said this, but I didn't catch it. Were the people who were asked that, the people who, the 40% who knew about it, the 62, that was everybody. Okay. All right. Could you, I couldn't catch it. I wanted to see that leading question that you asked them before you asked them if they supported it or not. that question. Can you read that again? I can't see that. And I think you read that to them before you asked them if they approved it or not? Mm-hmm. Could you read that again?
Yep.
And then I had another question about, okay, go ahead.
The South Dakota Nest Predator Bounty Program provides trapping opportunities for state residents while reducing predators that prey on the nests of pheasants and ducks during the nest season. Program participants receive $10 per eligible predator that is harvested through trapping. Eligible species to trap for this program are raccoon, striped skunk, badger, opossum, and red fox. And note that we didn't just make this up. You know, these are the official program descriptions. So it's not like we're making these up or anything.
Can you go forward to you where you got to a slide where it was talking about if they were given these mitigations, how did that affect what they thought about it? It was like it had like four or five things, and then it had a bunch of colors, but. The question is, were those mitigations things that they cooked up or that you specifically asked them? Keep going through your slides here.
Okay, which one?
Down, after this. Keep going. No, not that. It was a different slide.
Yep.
Keep going. Keep going.
Just hit start.
That one. So did they cook up those... four categories, or did you read those to them?
Yeah, those are
questions.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Another question up. Couple. Chris, you're in charge of question to question here.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I was just curious because the 17 and under people were not surveyed, and I know a lot of kids under that age that were trapping and that just started trapping. Is there any way that you can survey or check that unknown?
Yeah, great question. One of the things that we can do in this is it sounds like there's some interest in that. We did ask the adults who they took, and that information is in there. Mostly it's blood relatives, sons, daughters, mostly. So, good question. We could, if I think I know what you're thinking, is we could probably return. And sort of, we couldn't find if those kids had ever trapped before, but we do know that there was a lot of kids being taken by those adults.
Well, I know some that didn't get in the program because they ran out of traps, or they used their own. I think what that shows is there's probably a higher interest in participation out there than we really realize.
All I had to work with was the 3,000 individual database, okay. Of which, I don't know, 10-15%, don't quote me on that, were youth. So I have those numbers up there. We could work backwards and show you how were youth. So good point, good question.
So let me just interject as we go. Before you ask your question, if you could identify yourself, people are listening, and it'll be important for people to know who's speaking or asking.
Ball of worms, can of worms, is that what it is? Okay, so, yeah. So we did exclude anybody who was 17 and under. Good points.
Representative Goodwin has a question.
Yeah, Representative Tim Goodwin, represent District 30, Fall River, Custer, and Southern Pennington County. The question I have is probably for Game Fish and Parks, but could you put out the total numbers of each category, the number of raccoons that were trapped, skunks, and the list? Could you just give that to the crowd? Because it was really impressive.
We have a follow-up presentation, so this is the start of... more today.
Did I jump the gun?
Well, it's all right, but this is a good start. We're going to continue today, and then this the whole discussion is going to go over into March, so we're just getting started. But But we'll get it to you.
Do you want us to give that soon, Gary, or your call?
Oh, it's 2 o'clock. Well, let's do this. We'll get back to you soon, yet this afternoon, with those answers, if that's all right with you. But let me, there was another question. John Cooper had his hand up.
This would be.
John, can you wait till you get?
I'm John Cooper. I live here in Pierce, South Dakota. Mark, one of the things that I'm not quite clear on, you referred it as the Nest Bounty Program, and that would be the $500,000 that was paid for the actual tails, correct?
Yes.
Then the other part of this program is the nest, or the live trap giveaway. Mm-hmm. So was that reflected in your program here?
No.
So there's a question out there amongst people that probably took this survey as to the total cost issues and whether or not they would be.
They knew that they knew that it was the $500,000 program.
Okay, but I think the point here is that there's a common concern in regards to where the money was spent. When you take about $937,000, if I remember right, for 6,500 live traps given away, plus the $500,000 amount that was paid for the tails as part of the predator of the Nest Bounty Program, for a total somewhere around $1.4 million, which came from license monies paid for by the sportsmen of the state of South Dakota. So if you put a question to these people about where that money came from and what it's normally utilized in addition to this expenditure, and that those particular expenditures could have been matched to that license money that was spent on a normal 3-to-1 basis with other outdoor programs like the Pittman-Robertson DJ program, then there would have been a concern on behalf of whether or not this would have been a proper expenditure of money. That's why the survey portions that you got, I believe, are accurate. But do the people who are taking that survey have the background information that I just provided? That's a question and that's a concern on behalf of sportsmen of the state of South Dakota.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where the background information on that is. As we did explain it, but you're making a good point, and we did not cover that part of it. So,
is there another question in the audience? I think there is.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Swingen. I work for the USDA Forest Service. I thought that was a really, excuse me, I thought that was a very interesting presentation. At the beginning of your talk, you were describing how weighted you could weight the responses by demographic strata. And then you had a slide that showed a difference between males and rural versus males and urban. Were there other demographic differences between the support for the department, support to the program, et cetera?
I'm sorry. The thing that we saw that first off, this is a pretty small survey. 400 people is not a lot of people. So, you know, you're talking about in terms of methodology and stuff like that. So while I feel really good in terms that we can talk to 400 people and essentially know what's happening in terms of overall residents, when you start cutting that down, all of a sudden the sampling error is not 400 of men or women, it's 200. So you've got a larger sampling error. So great point. And so we ran those because some of those things were showing statistically significant. I think they needed to see them. However, the two things that were driving this in terms of support or opposition were two things for the support and opposition. One was their attitudes toward the department. And again, I don't know if that's circular. I don't know if they didn't like the department and therefore didn't like the program, or they didn't like the program and then didn't like the department. But that was absolutely one of the more important variables. The second one was simply, how much did you pay this guy to do this? Rich people buy more boats. Well, people who oppose trapping oppose the program. But those, when you look at all of those variables together, men, women, urban, suburban, age, or whatever it is,
those two variables drove almost everything. Did they like the department, and did they support trapping? They support trapping, they were more likely to support the Nest Predator Bounty Program. If they liked the department, they were more likely to do it. If they didn't like the department, they were not likely to support the program. If they didn't like trapping, they weren't likely to support the bounty program. So good question. Other things like age and stuff, once you start looking at sampling error, it becomes really small. So good question. Thank you.
So anybody else out there have a question? So everybody knows, I mean, this is the start of a discussion that will continue for a while yet this afternoon, and we'll go into our next meeting in March. So with that in mind and trying to, I mean, looking at the survey and thinking about what might come up in the future, since this is a program that was paid for by sportsmen and sportswomen dollars, can you tell us why there was no survey of sportsmen? I mean, you surveyed participants in the bounty program and then sort of across the whole state. But I guess my question at the moment is, why wouldn't the sportsmen who pay for this, sportsmen and women, have been surveyed?
Yeah, great question. I'm trying to think if we asked whether they were hunters or anglers. I mean, quite frankly, I do what I'm told, and we work with the department on what they wanted, and so we implemented that.
When I looked at the, in terms of breaking it down, you had a slide up there that talked about crosstabs, and that's where you had certain characteristics of the people in South Dakota that didn't know. I mean, 61% of them, and they had rural and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see a category of sportsmen or sportswomen.
Yeah, I'm not convinced we asked that. I can go back. I think if we were asked, I probably would have cross-tabulated it. I think it's a good point. I think it's their money. I think that's important. We were not asked to do that, and so again, I'm a good consultant. I do what I'm told. So.
No, I understand. And so then if we go to the resident survey and 61% didn't know anything about the program, mm-hmm. and then they were given the one statement about the program, I'm certain that we're going to hear and people are going to wonder why, as a part of that statement, I mean, part of the statement was people get $10 a tail, mm-hmm. but nobody said it costs $500,000 plus. I mean, those people were not told that.
Yeah, there was a question.
Well, I saw that in the participant part, but yeah. Not in the resident part.
I'll go back and look. I would be surprised if we didn't ask that, but I can go back
well,
and look.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I know we had discussions about it before this survey went out, and. Mm-hmm. And the slide that you put up and mentioned the 500,000, I'm pretty sure, at least today, was limited to participants
okay. And
not beyond. And then I think another fundamental part of this, and I don't think there's any dispute on this either, because we've been talking about it a long time, and we're going to talk about it another several weeks. I mean, there's no science, if you will, that establishes these goals that are of this program are met as a consequence of this bounty program. I really don't think that's in dispute. Yet in that statement given to the residents before they answered if they were in favor or not, mm-hmm. they weren't given that information either. I'm just trying to figure out why those two pieces of the puzzle weren't included. And
which one? The sportsman?
The total cost of $500,000 and the fact that there's really no science that establishes this is helping with nesting.
Yeah, I can't answer that. Remember that you all provided us with information in what you wanted asked. The original contract actually was for 8 questions. And so the final survey ended up being probably 25 or 30 questions. So the other thing to know, Mr. Chairman, is that this survey was routed around for approval by department staff, and I thought that commissioners had looked at it too.
So again, anything that is or is not contained in there was approved by the commission. We didn't just independently go out and start asking questions. We were given the goals of the program, the parameters of what you wanted. It was supposed to be a very short survey on what the general population thought, because I knew you were taking heat for that. We developed those questions. Those questions were passed around to the department. I have no idea internally what the review process was. Department came back and said, these are the questions we want. People changed some things. We changed that. It went out again. And so what we did is simply implemented what the department asked for. So if there are omissions or anything like that, I can't stand up here and say why or why not. That's not my job.
Okay. Any other questions that anybody has? One more, Nancy, then we've got to go. We've got a whole lot to do yet today.
$35,000 for two surveys.
Okay. Any other questions or anything you want to say in summary?
Thank
you for being here, and we're sorry the weather is the way it is. And
I really appreciate being here. I really appreciate what you all are doing. I'd like to end where I started. You guys have a hard job in terms of what you're doing. As you make decisions about these programs, think about that whole paradigm of what Fish and Wildlife Management, well, I've talked to a lot of graphs here, but that very first, puts a lot of what you're dealing in with perspective. What I was dealing with is that human population issue. That's what I'm doing. That's what I do. This program and anything that you do needs to be evaluated within those three legs of the three-legged stool of wildlife conservation, which are what the impacts are on populations the program has and those habitats as well. I can bring science to you. I can tell you almost unequivocally that if you did this survey 10 times, if you hired South Dakota State, Gallup, everybody else, people are going to come back and say the same thing. Now, you know, and that's what we do. We ask neutral questions. If you would have come to me and said, hey, ask the question, you're not one of those idiots that thinks start saying things that aren't true. And so, we try as hard as we can to get you a good representative sample and ask questions that are related to the project and the program. Do you support or oppose? Do you agree or disagree? So, if there are omissions there, then that the information that was given to me. But I think you have a hard job in this one, because I understand we've been doing attitudes on animal rights and animal welfare issues and trapping for close to 30 years. I know it's heated. I know people have very strong feelings in one direction or the other. What we try to do is take that out and understand perspective from what people think and feel and know, regardless of what the issues are related to populations and habitats. So.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Safe travels home.
Thanks.
So here's what